The Two Man Game Podcast is brought to you by Renaissance Insurance, Ryan Hicks.
What's up, guys? It's head coach of the Bears, Steve Smiley, and I'm honored to tell KFKA listeners all about my guy, Ryan Hicks, and Renaissance Insurance. Like basketball, there's plenty of players in the insurance game. So how do you choose the best one for you? For me, I look for character, passion, dedication, and like a star hooper, talent. Renaissance Insurance checks all the boxes and draws up the winning play every time. Let them find the perfect game plan for you. Call Ryan at 970-674-8825 or go to team-rig.com. Go Bears! Go Bears!
It's not the final episode of the two-man game, but the final episode, I suppose, of the 25-26 season. Head coach Steve Smiley. I'm Brady Hall. Two-man game podcast. Are you ready to rock and roll?
We're ready. We're bridging the gap, right? Like you're getting through the funeral of 25-26, but then you got to move forward.
Just like that.
And it's like, this is the way it goes. But I'm glad we played the fight song. I know we didn't end with the win, a win in the Big Sky tournament, but at the same point in time, like, The body of work that the Bears had this year, it was awesome. And so it certainly necessitates the positivity of the Bears fight song to end 25-26. So I appreciate you playing that, Brady.
Well, Coach, it was a fun season.
It's a great season.
I mean, it was there were a lot of ups and downs. Mm-hmm. I mean, non-conference, we went into that. And then, of course, the slump you hit to start Big Sky play and then to come all the way back and avoid that bottom four spot. It was a really amazing season. Another 20-plus win season for you.
Yeah.
You beat CU for the first time in a million years. I'm looking at UNC, the basketball Twitter account, and there's just guy after guy that moved up in the all-time record books and phenomenal awards like Quinn Danker's getting. It was a really solid season, but we all know, like, that's what we talk about throughout the season. Is it always there in the back of your head? Because it's always going to come down to what you do in that tournament.
It's a one-bid league. We finished fourth. I'd have to go back through, and we can talk about this next week. I'll go back through the historic rankings of the Big Sky. The Big Sky finished 15th in the country out of 31. Upper mid-major league. Finished top four. And technically, There was one game there that got a little goofy on the road during that losing stretch that we've never really got into, but like probably should have won that game, and if that would have gone the way it was supposed to go, finished top three. So it's like, okay, we're sitting here in one of the best seasons the Big Sky ever had, which goes back to we've only lost 1 year here, right? That was that 1 year. Everyone's like, well, you had Dalton and you had Matt and Dalen. There's no doubt about it, and we finished seventh that year. Well, that was the other year the Big Sky was so loaded. Remember, everyone was like, I can't believe Dalton's not first team. No doubt about it. But if you go back through revisionist history and look at that year with the players in the league, Cedric Coward, who might be the NBA Rookie of the Year, no one's talking about him then. But he was a first-team All-League guy, right?
No.
Dylan Jones, who's an NBA guy. Like, there's only five or six of those first-team spots. We fell a little short that year when the league was really good. We did. But for us this year, when the league was even better, to finish top four, and really it could have been even better. We were right there at the end, winning 9 of our last 10 games. And, you go back and as a coach, and I thought our guys did a great job human nature-wise of not overlooking Montana, but when you beat a team by 35-40, got to play the same team for 6 days later, and that team's really good, and they have extreme winning DNA and pedigree just like us. And, it's really hard to recreate the wheel, and we just dug that hole in that first half against Montana. Had a great comeback.
It was a phenomenal comeback. You guys were down 17 at the half.
Yeah,
it was
a two-point game with a minute five left, and they had the ball, two-point game, minute five left, and 5 seconds left on the shot clock, and Money had the ball at the top, and we were going to kind of blitz his ball screen, and there was the foul that I don't know about that one. I don't think we got a bad whistle or anything, but like it's 5 seconds left on the shot clock. We had to try to blitz him and get the ball out of his hands. And in the course of that ball screen defense, he was able to pin a foul on us. So we got it down to the one possession, and we had a great chance. And even like at the very, very end, it's like, why didn't you guys foul when the guy chucked the ball all the way to – I felt great about it. We were like one trap.
I did too.
Yeah, one trap with 12 seconds, one trap, and then we have to foul. Because we'd cut it to, I believe, two or three on that free throws. And the guy that we trapped was not money, it was Thompson. And first of all, he's an 87% free throw shooter. So you foul him, he's going to make them. But what we knew going into it is teams that had trapped them late, they got really, really skittish late. And it wasn't a double team, it was a quadruple team because we had him in the best spot, the baseline, the sideline, double teamed. He was panicking. And as they're big, as Sawyer flashed up, Brock kind of flashed with him, which was the right thing to do. Maybe he overdid it a little bit, but I felt great about it. And somehow, some way, he saw it. You know, there's one guy open, obviously, right, when you have two guys on the ball. And he saw Kenyon Aguino, and he made a great pass. And if he doesn't make that pass or that ball squirts out of bounds, we look like geniuses having a chance to tie or win that game. And so it was a great game. It was a disappointing start. We haven't been down like that at halftime. And it just I've already been dumb enough to go back and watch the game. Mm. A lot of coaches, they say, I'll never watch the last game. I have to do it to get to some peace of mind. And we just – the shots we had made and wanted to get to all year long, you know, obviously a lot of the usage goes through Brock Wisney and Quinn Danker. They got great looks, didn't finish as many as they usually do. And Money Williams had an epic first half. He was unbelievable. And he hit tough shot after tough shot. And it just is what it is. So I don't have any regrets on scheme or this or that. We got outplayed, and it happens. But what a great season, you know, as I babble on. The thing that people don't see, too, unless you're really deep into it, we finished as a top 150 team in the country. And the KenPom, the NCAA net, our goal, if you said, what's your goal, right, as a Big Sky school? Because not many teams do it. Can you have a winning record in the Big Sky? Not many teams can get to it. Then we were the only team that got to 20 wins in the regular season. Portland State hit 20 by winning their first game in a tournament. The only team to get to 20 wins at a school like this where we got to play a bunch of money games, which means you're usually going to lose those. But, you know, games like at Portland, at Pepperdine, at CU, those were all wins. Those were money games. So that's how you get to where you get to have a winning record and have that a chance in that 20-win season, which is just awesome. But then, two, to be – I think we finished 141. I haven't looked after last night. I don't think it changed much. But 141 in the KenPom, 147 in the net. To me, very few teams in the Big Sky can get sub-200. Get to 100s. If you get to the 100s, you're really good.
Yeah.
And even like, I think the year where we won 22 games, lost in the CBI Final Four, beat Dusty Main Florida Atlantic, that team was in the 200s. That team was in the 200s. And we lost in the Big Sky Championship to Montana State. That team was in the 200s. We were 140. So I hate to, you know, it's always not as good as when you blow your own horn, right? But people need to understand like where this thing has gone to. And I don't want to ever take that for granted because it was an amazing season. It was a 20-win season in a great league, a team that finished top 150 in the country. That's not what this is supposed to be. So I'm extremely proud of that.
Well, Coach, from a fan's perspective, I'm proud too.
Yeah.
And a UNC alum looking at this. Like, I'm a big NBA guy too. And they do their playoffs. It's best of seven because we know one game scenario. Oh. In the NBA, one game doesn't tell even a portion of the story,
right,
whether it's the regular season or a playoff game.
Yep.
For you guys, unfortunately, for people on the outside, typically that one game seems to tell that gigantic story. And that just, it is what it is. It's tough.
Yep.
But that's why college basketball, so especially one bid league,
yeah,
such a different beast.
The 7 seed won it this year in the Big Sky. And they were worthy of winning it.
They were. You said,
and I told you,
1 through 7.
Teams. There's 7 teams that can win this thing. But when you're like, man, the 7, how that? Because they're good.
Yeah.
There were 7 good teams in the league. There was a year, a couple years ago, where Montana State won it with Coach Logie. They went into March Madness with a losing record. And they played in the first 4, and they got beat by one of the HBCUs. But it's a one-bid league. And it goes that we were talking about this off-air, that one thing we start to notice with it being in Boise, it's a great environment. It's a great atmosphere. It's a great town. It's a clean town. The Big Sky does a great job. You get these great hotels are right by the venue. It's a perfect end of the season. I want it there forever in the sense of like, what are your options? It used to be in Reno. I was in the Reno days. No disrespect, but this Boise thing's clean. It's not. It's just great. We used to be in these old hotels with, you know, these casinos, smoky. Mm. Like, it's like, this is bizarro land. So it's great. But what you do see too is like, hey, these Idahos and these Montanas, and those are the schools that are able to drive and travel crowds in, and it's turning into a more and more popular thing. The crowd for that Idaho-Montana State game, which was like the two – it was unbelievable. And it's like, whoa. Like, yeah. You know, it's getting harder because, like, you're playing road games. And we're talking about it's like, I think the last 5 years, we've lost to a team from Montana or Idaho in the tournament. Sometimes in the championship, sometimes before. And it's the one thing. It's like, you're going to have to win on the road. It's very similar to, like, the Summit League. If you're not one of those four Dakota schools, right? And I bet if you go through the history of that league, too – you know, like North Dakota State won it this year. My guy Paul said they lost in the championship. He's at North Dakota. They were like the 7 seed, right? No, that's a lie. They were a 3 seed this year. But you go back to the power of the South Dakota State, right? How many years they went over to South Dakota? Those are home games because it's played in Sioux Falls. It's played at the Pentagon or one of those. Like, it's awesome. It's a great environment. But, man, if you're not one of those four Dakotas, it's really, really hard to win those games because you're just – it's hard to win road games. So, not to make excuses, we got beat. But at the end of the day, like, the 7 seed won it. Idaho won it, but they didn't have the 7th best crowd. They had probably the best crowd. And they're traveling. They're showing up. Much respect to those people. But, it's a one-bid league. And if you don't get hot at the right time, if you don't pull it off the right time, we can't get to the NIT unless you win the championship here. It's like, what? Hey, we had metrics that were close. But
without looking at it, I thought you were going to get there.
We won the championship last year, got the 1 seed. And the only way we've talked about last year to the NIT is you have to hit this thing called it's like a WAB, I think. And it takes all the metrics, the net, the KenPom. And in these one-bid leagues, you have to be the 1 seed and hit a 125 or better. We were like a 125, too. We made it by like 0.8 to get in to play Irvine last year. And we were so deserving. We had a great team.
Yeah.
But you're not going to hit those metrics. Like this year, Portland State, they didn't hit the metrics. That's why they didn't play. Like, you can't hit the metrics. It's too hard. So then the CBI and the CBI shut down. I always want to play in those things. You know, we were invited to that. We had a contract. Now, could we have afforded it? I don't know about that. But I want to play. I want to
play more games. Yeah.
I want to play in the postseason. I think it's incredibly important for retention, for notoriety, for team building, like to have your team together for 8 or 9 more days right before this portal hits. It's critical. But that was not our lot in life. It was the first spring break you guys have had in 3 years. They're all home right now, which is great, too. Like, you'd be a college kid, go home. But it's as you're trying to – from a – you know, professional standpoint and a building a team standpoint, it's different. So
with Idaho ultimately winning it, they'll play a friend of yours, I think, because Kelvin Sampson.
Sampson, I know.
You know, you guys played them not too long ago, and Kelvin gave you some high praise. We talked about this on one of his podcasts.
It's like playing 5-on-9 because their defense is just insanity,
ridiculous.
It's unbelievable.
Hammer that under for those that participate. You know, for you, when you looked at it and said, realistically, you've been saying this for weeks, 1 through 7. Has a realistic shot. Is there a part of you that looks at it? Because, you know, as the season progressed, it was, it's Portland State. Maybe Montana State. You can't forget about Montana. Probably the Bears thrown in there, too, as far as teams that we believe could win the tournament. And then when you see an Idaho win, which is no disrespect to them because they deserved deserved this opportunity, is there a part of your brain, though, that's like, see, like this league, 1 through 7, anybody could win it? Does that...
Well,
alleviate some of the frustration at all? Or
I think last year, you know, Eastern Washington was awesome. Their record just stunk.
Yeah.
But it stunk because they played like 9 money games.
Mm-hmm.
So they walked in the league at 2-11. But they were really good. They had one of the best rosters. Well, this is where it gets into all this NIL stuff, and I don't know their business, but like you play all those money games. One, they're a lot. I think Eastern Washington's a lot like Northern Colorado. You have to play money games to help your budget. I think that's true. But then do you play above and beyond that to help pay players, you know, with rev share or create staff help with salaries, things like that? There's a reason they played all those money games. But they had a really good roster. So they're like 2-11. Oh, man, Eastern Washington stinks. No. They got, they had with Huey, with Alton Hamilton, Isaiah Moses, who arguably is the best player in the league, they had some guys. And so when they got to the Final Four, I'm like, I'm not so sure. They're not going to win this whole thing. So it's hard to just evaluate this, but you look at Idaho, it's like, yeah, they had as good of a roster, if not better than anybody. I mean, it's really impressive, the roster they put together. And they had some injuries and stuff like that, too. Last year, I thought there was a clear 1 and 2 with us in Montana.
Sure.
And then it was everybody else. And it was great that the two of us got to the championship and had that epic game, and we just came up short. It wasn't like that this year. It was like we're all so close analytically. No one, even Portland State, was not head and shoulders above anybody.
No.
It was all about the same on paper. It was all about the same on the analytics. It would have been weird if one of the top seven didn't. Like, if, let's just say the nine seed gets hot and just, boom, goes through. That would have been weird. But
yeah.
But Idaho was, I mean, very deserving. And they had to get through four games. That's the one thing I did not want to have to get to four games. They got it done, which is extremely impressive.
Yeah, well, it was a crazy season all year. And,
yeah.
And sometimes it shows how crazy it can be in that tournament. I saw a post a couple of weeks ago that obviously this doesn't pertain to you guys this year, but last year perhaps, some fairly well-known writer was saying, hey, the problem with one-bid leagues, I think there needs to be a significant advantage to that number one seed.
Yeah.
And he didn't go into details of what that significant advantage
sure.
would be, but I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
Should there be more, I don't know, more buys?
Yeah.
Something that ensure, because again, it's such a long season, and then to earn that number one seed,
yeah.
is a battle. But it could all just drop like it does. You know, you guys witnessed it. Portland State witnessed it in that tournament.
Miami, Ohio witnessed it. We just saw them play last night.
But
you go to it.
Yeah,
so it's
sure.
like there's only two things you can do. One, go back to the old school days where whoever wins the league hosts a tournament. Right, so it's not at Boise, it's in Greeley.
Which I was going to ask your thoughts on that, Missouri. Even though you love it, Boise, but that's interesting.
I was a part of it when we – so here's the deal. So when I was at Weber State, I've been here 12 years in the league, 10 years at UNC, 12 years in the league. The very last host gets – or the champ gets the host, I was there. My first year at Weber State, we were picked to win it. We finished eighth. Our best player, not named Joel Ballenboy, but our other best player, Jeremy Sanglin, shattered his jaw. He was so good. So we lost all these games, and Montana won it. It was at Montana. Only eight teams got in. We got the eight seed, so we at least survived to get in. The other however many teams don't even get in. So it's 1 through 8. So we get the eight seed. We go to Montana. Sanglin came back. He had his jaw wired. They cut the wires off, came back, gave him 35. We had the game, won to beat Montana. And this is a long story. It goes off the rails. But there was a mysterious jump ball with a couple seconds left. Or mysterious foul, should have been a jump ball. They beat us to win the whole championship. But I witnessed it, right? So I was a part of that. Then the next year, I went to Reno. And that was the year at Weber State that we won it. We won it in Reno. We were the one seed. Montana was the two seed. And so I've been a part of both of those. I think logistically it gets extremely hard. We talk about budgets. Our budget is really hard to deal with, as everyone knows. Everyone sees the local news and stuff with the deficits
sure.
and things. If you don't know where you're going until like 2 days before, because that is the reality, right? Like if you're, hey, the number one seed, we tied with Montana. We got the one seed, right, a year ago. There is a world in where you don't know where it's going to be played at until like 2 days before. So I think that logistically, the place, I guess, that has to fly everywhere. A lot of these places can drive to most places, you know, but we have to fly everywhere. We're geographically located. I think it makes it extremely hard on the budget. And then two, to host eight teams, or if you hope bring all 10 or 11 teams in, to really get all that hotel space held, like here, a lot of teams will stay at the DoubleTree, right, downtown.
Mm-hmm.
But like you're talking about, the DoubleTree would have to hold, I don't know, 100 rooms in the chance, but then it's like, well, we lost a tiebreaker, so it's not here. So then they've just – I don't know if people would agree to that anymore.
That would be tough.
It's a disaster.
That's a great point.
It's a disaster, but it is an extreme advantage for the one seed. The other way to do it would be like obviously the WCC where you get like four buys into the semifinals. So like we've had these arguments, you know, in the Big Sky meetings. And Coach DeCure, who I always have a tremendous amount of respect for, Montana coach, he's talked about it before too. Like why aren't we – hiding and protecting our one seeds or two seeds more because there's really no advantage. You saw this year, the two seed got knocked out. It happens all the time. The one and two seed get knocked out because, you know, the one plays the winner of 9-10, the two plays the winner of 7-8, and those teams have won and they're confident.
Yeah.
They got their sea legs under them. They've been in the arena. It is hard to win those first games. And then you get the bye and it's great. You know, the day off, not the bye, but the day off. So, yeah, the only other way to do it is to just maximize the buys for your one and twos. And it's like the WCC. And the Big 12 does it too with Linder and those guys. So in the Big 12, the 1, 2, 3, and 4, they have all these buys, right? So you got to win to play Texas Tech or whoever it is. In the WCC with Gonzaga and St. Mary's, they finished 1-2. And then the 3 and the 4, I think, was obviously Santa Clara. and Oregon State. And so they get a bye. So it's like you get buys here, then you get buys here, then everyone else, it's like here, here, here. If you're at the lower end of the spectrum, you got to win like 5 games in 5 days. And it just physically just destroys you eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So what typically happens in WCC is that the top four teams get to the top four at least, and then you got to play it out. That's the only thing you can do. You could just maximize the buys, or you could play it at the number one seed. That's it. There's no other way to do it.
There's really no other way, because until they start, if they ever do start adding more teams to March Madness, then I suppose there's a conversation of your regular season champ versus your conference champ, but there's just not enough slots.
Yeah, because those will still go to the big boys. They're not going to us. But then, too, you saw with Miami, Ohio, who played last night and won. They got beat in the 1-8 game.
Yeah.
UMass beat them in a 1-8 game. And now it's like, oh, no, they're 31, they're not good enough. And they got beaten in 1-8 in the MAC. What's going on? And Travis Steele, in his post game, he's like, hey, in the MAC, we got to, not just because it's us, like we got beat today by UMass, but we got to evaluate this. You know, how are we protecting our best teams? Because that's exactly what happens. You go 31-0, and then you get knocked. All these teams are good.
Yeah.
Then you get knocked, and it's like, oh, now
one
you don't
game.
Get, and look, the MAC, they got Miami, Ohio. They got in barely, right? The first four game, they got in. And then Miami, Ohio wins that game. So they're getting millions in revenue for the next several years for their league and for their school. But they barely got in, right? So if they didn't get in, they just lost millions of dollars in revenue for not only Miami, Ohio, but for the MAC by not protecting them.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's an absolute discussion. Is this the right way to do it? I mean, but at the end of the day, like, you know, that would not have helped us out this year because we were not a one or two seed.
Right.
But you're right. Like, it's something that these lower one-bid leagues have to evaluate. Are we doing this the right way? I don't know. But it's fun. Boise's awesome.
But
it's hard.
It's just so hard. And I think I brought this up several times, you know, regardless of the season, especially if it's a positive one, which this season was.
Yeah.
It's still in the back of your mind. It's got to be. It's human nature. Like, yeah, this is all good, but we still have to win all these games in the tournament.
Yeah.
And you look at, like, it's a bad example, but Miami, Ohio, I think they could knock off a lot of teams if they're shooting like that. Like last night,
they're legit, and it's not
terrifying.
Their fault. You know, like, did you see the Frank Martin rant? But
yeah,
it was true.
Yeah.
It's exactly true. You start off in these leagues. We finished 140 this year. Brady, we're going to start off like 240 next year. Just what it is, because big size. You know,
like
I've never
resets.
Heard someone explain it the way Frank Martin explained it. And he's dead on. You've got to start, so you never can get to the point of like being an at-large conversation because you start so far behind. But then it's like, well, how do you get ahead? When we beat CU, we jumped like 40 points. Awesome. But the problem is, and we're not playing CU next year, the problem is if you can't get those games and then win those games, you have no – and I don't know, you know, Travis Steele came out of Miami, Ohio coach came out and said, we tried to play teams that wouldn't play
us. They don't want to play them, yeah.
And I guess they had a roster coming. Their whole roster came back, and it's like, yeah, we're not playing that team because they got retention and this and that. So you have no chance. So, like, yeah, I'm just glad they got in. And I actually did watch that game last night. I'm glad they they whacked those guys.
Yeah.
They were awesome, and they whacked them. And it's like, these teams are really good too. And how about the SMU? They said the one guy was going to play. And he didn't play.
He didn't play?
I'd do the same thing. Why not? Like, you got to get in.
Yeah.
He didn't play, but it's like, hey, we expect him to play. I don't know who this guy is. I don't know the roster, but, like, I guess one of the best players had been hurt. They're like, oh, yeah, he'll be back. And so they get in. And then he didn't play.
it's like, that's the game. Like,
brutal.
Brutal. It's that one shot there. And, again, Miami, they'll have Miami, Ohio, one thing was, it's not BYU. Who are they going to play next? I should have looked at
maybe
that.
Are they the Tennessee one?
I think maybe so.
I can't remember, but yeah. So
yeah, it's it's madness for a reason.
It is.
It's confusing
and that's why
to go
people
through.
Love it. It's fun, and
that's, I think this is why college football wants to add more and more playoff games because they want some of this.
Yeah.
They want the more conversations you're having around a bracket, the better,
yeah.
Whether it's negative or positive, because people get engaged that way.
Yeah, for sure.
And
I agree.
It's a lot of fun, Coach. You know, just kind of looking at this roster. We had our last Brock Wisney show on Tuesday.
Oh, my God, man.
And I said something to Brock on the air, and this is 100% true. And I think you and I have talked about this off the air.
Okay.
Where I personally was like, okay, I love doing these player shows. It's great.
Yeah.
It gives them a platform. It connects me to the program in a different way.
For sure.
And I love that because that's what, as
for
a radio
sure.
host, you're looking just for more connections. And I told Brock, I said, before we started doing the Brock Wisney show, I wasn't sure what the future of these player shows were going to look like. I'm not sure if we keep doing them,
yeah.
how that's going to go, because for some guys, you don't know. It's like trying to schedule them, and they can't get in this week.
Messy, yeah.
It was messy. Brock changed that for me this year. His willingness to get behind the show, it was – if I'd forget to give out a game ball, he would call me out on the air and be like, dude, are we doing game balls?
Yeah.
And I've never had that before. So
he is an adult.
I just want to say, man, and again, with the guys that you're recruiting, and Brock's, because really was good last year. Really,
oh, absolutely.
Like, no one in particular made me not want to do the shows. It's just you wonder if you know, you always.
You're working with college kids.
You're right. Yeah, right. No, is it worth doing it for both sides? And just the guys that you're bringing in makes it so easy.
Well, we appreciate that. And, you know, Brock obviously is just he's the salt of the earth, right? But the thing, too, is like, you know, going back to the big picture team of what we did this year in the 140, we did that with really good human beings. You know, our fall GPA is 3.4. I sleep so good at night, and there's not – well, that's a lie, Bray. I don't sleep very well, but it's not because of stress. I'm worried about the guys. You know, so it's like a lot of coaches, they sit up all night. Hey, is my phone going to ring at 2 in the morning? Obviously, you see some stuff in the paper with one of the top programs and the one player's not playing and not to call that guy. But, like, it's, like it's a disaster with – you know, legal issues. We don't have any of that. Mm-hmm. So when you get really good players, and I always believe it's a cycle that you get good players, they got to be good enough, right? But you get good people that are good students that want to be here for a reason, that you don't have all these exterior distractions, that now you can focus on developing them as players as well as humans. But when you're walking kids to class and they're in the paper for the wrong reasons and this guy just got busted for this, you can't build it the right way. I believe that. So, like, to the point, Brock is a great example. But, like, all these guys are like that, and they're such good dudes. And so, like, yeah, Brock's – he's an adult, and we're going to miss him so much. I mean, geez, that's where, like, the grieving process. Yeah, one, because we want to be playing today. It pains me that we're not playing a Houston today or whoever. It's frustrating to no end. But it also pains me that, you know – just on a very basic level, you know, the Brocks, the Quinns, the Zachs, they're done, man. It's over. And, like, those guys have been such a big piece of my life on and off the court for years and years and years. But there's always the next guy. It pained me last year when Jaron and Hawthorne and Langston, and I know I'm going to miss some guys. When those guys were – it's like, man, these guys are done.
Yeah.
So you got to pick yourself up off the map.
What is that – talk to me about that process, too, because I get it a very small percentage with, like, one guy. And it's like, Brock, man, I'm going to miss that dude. Jaron was really cool. Yeah. For you, you develop these really close relationships with these guys. I remember Quinn referencing when he found out he had another year of eligibility. He calls you up.
Yeah.
Personally, he's like, wow, coach, this is a gift. And that conversation, him telling it, just stood out to me as he's calling you. There's like it's like teamwork there. He's confiding in you also. There's a bond that you build with these guys. Maybe not every single person that comes through that room. But for the most part, you develop this bond with these guys. You never turn the switch off completely because you always love the guys. I know you're big on updating people on what these guys are doing in their career beyond UNC. But there has to be another switch that does say, okay, they're done. Now it's moving on. Got to build up these relationships with these other dudes quickly.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And the first thing is, like, you know, we're on spring break right now, and we haven't had a spring break in at least 3 years because we've always been playing. So it's a little weird, to be honest with you. But so no one's here. I think we have one guy here that did not go home, but everyone's gone. They just fled everywhere, which is great. Be a kid if we're not going to be playing. But the starting point was, you know, last week as we kind of get into, like, who's coming back or intention. I don't know. But we look at it systematically, and we met the team and we came back and said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We only had like a day and a half before spring break. And then I went to Vegas to go see my daughter play volleyball. So, like, time was up. You can't meet with all you guys. You can't meet with 16 guys. The math doesn't math. We're going to meet with the seniors first to make sure we understand what they're, you know, they want to play pro. Where are they at with the agents and this and that? How can we help? Because those conversations have to happen. So, you know, the Zachs and the Quinns and the Brocks. And I was like, okay, what are you doing? Ebus. Then we're going to meet with, because I do believe for all intents and purposes that even though it says Ebu's a junior, the whole goal of him was he was going to graduate this year and go, you know, be the number one draft pick in the Pro B1 draft in Japan.
Yeah,
I don't think that's changing, which is perfectly fine because we'd love to hold on to Ebu, but I think he's going to be doing that. So four guys. We only played eight guys real rotational minutes. So then it's Ring, Arik, Vince Delano, Egan Shields. that play defense. We're going to be with those guys first. And not that they have to give us an answer to what they're doing, right? But we need to see where their heads are at first before we start meeting as we kind of flow down the roster, guys that didn't play as much or guys that registered or whatever it is. Because I can't give you any logical advice or direction on, like, what do you see my role as next year until I know the guys that played. Not to say you can't beat those guys out, but this is the decisions we made this year based off the roster. I think there was the right decisions. I think we had a really good team. But we got to know what those guys, where their heads are at first as we kind of go through. So we met those guys quickly before we went on spring break. We're going to have to meet them again, right? I mean, there's a lot of things that go into these decisions. And then as we're kind of meeting with them now, getting a better picture of where their heads are at, then meeting with the guys that are on the roster that could come back, absolutely saying, okay, this is what we think. And worrying way more about retention before we get into recruiting. The only recruiting right now, there's a lot of recruiting going on, but the main recruiting, because we've already signed two high school kids, Drew Payne and Jeremiah Hammond, in the fall. So the only recruiting for us, there's not as much like 2026 high school guys. We're way too young if we keep taking young guys.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a ton of that going on, but it's junior college, evaluating that, evaluating the international stuff, and then evaluating Division II portal guys. Guys are in the portal in the D2 world. That portal's open. So we can legally recruit those guys and pop on Zooms, and we can even bring them out in visits, which we haven't done yet. But evaluating those guys, we can't do anything with the D1 guys because the portal doesn't open up until I think it's like April 7th or whatever it is. It's really weird. I don't like it. I don't like that we, not just us, but every school in the country is probably over-recruiting the Division II guys, and there's some really good players. But since no one can technically talk to Division I guys, these D2 guys are probably getting over-recruited, to be honest with you, as it pertains to just calls and Zooms, but also the money, the NIL, like all that stuff, right? So we're trying to factor all that into it right now as we say, okay, it's about retention. It's probably not so much about high school. Yeah, internationals, we're evaluating that. But then Division II portal stuff, it starts with that, and then it's just got to be patient. You're trying to accumulate information. You know, obviously, guys are popping in the – they're not in the portal, but you see it all the time. Even guys in our leagues, so-and-so is saying from this big sky school or that big sky school. I mean, there's at least 10, 15 guys already that were real players in our league said they're going to get in the portal. They're not technically in the portal yet, but they've announced their intentions, if that makes sense. So, yeah, I mean, right now it's like, okay – I want to work on retention. We had 7 returners 2 years ago and 9 new guys. Last year we had 8 returners and 8 new guys. So it's been floating around that 50% range, which I've been very comfortable with. Can we do it again? I don't know. I just don't ever want to get to the point in time where you have like 2 returners and, you know, 14. Oh, man. So can we hold on to half of the roster? I think we're going to be reducing our roster next year. We had 16 guys this year. As we deal with, some budget issues too, it's like, okay, how do you keep cutting your budget down? Well, a huge chunk of our budget is just travel and team travel and gear and things like that, food, whatever it is. So can we reduce our budget down that way too and have just a little bit smaller roster? So all those things are on the table right now.
Well, and I know we can't get answers on this stuff right now, but obviously when I look at it from my perspective, I'm like, the guys that, you look at who you're building around next season, Ring Neary, obviously, kind of floats to the top. He just progressed so much throughout the season.
Yeah.
He's got the body type for it. He might be a guy that could obviously play overseas, whatever, but who knows? He could even go beyond that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Certainly a stud there. Vincent Delano, I thought, was really – he was – when did we really see a good chunk of him? I think it was when Quinn Denker went down, and you were asking so much from him.
Yeah, I mean
– who were you playing? It was the team – was it South Dakota?
Well, that and before that, Texas Tech. Tremendous at Texas Tech.
Just handling the ball so well with that press, too, with South Dakota. It was the crazy press that was going on. Arik Muyen, obviously another big one, and then Egan Shields, kind of those four guys.
Those four are the four that played. Heavy traditional minutes. Then you had some other guys that played vital roles when needed, guys like Hunter Caldwell, Tanner Burkita. And I know I'm probably missing somebody here, but when you look at it, it's like going through those four guys, Vince Delano, only a sophomore. It's like, he's a portal guy, but it's like he's still young in the game. And I think one of our goals for Vince coming in from Portland in the WCC is like super talented in a lot of ways, explosive, fast. But it's like, okay, can we get your metrics, your ratings, your analytics? Can we get those to where we think they are for a winning player and a winning program? And he did it. And so things that you look at behind the scenes, that's like you got to get to over a 100 rating as a baseline. He did it. And so he did massive growth. Egan Shields, obviously, like the big thing for Egan is that, okay, when you know that Brock is going to get the majority of the minutes, and the cool thing is we were able to play those two guys together. We needed to figure that out, and we did. You know, we finally locked the two big lineup. But for Egan, too, it's like, okay, am I playing 25 tonight? Am I playing 9? Like, what am I playing right now? Like, any year, you have to go earn it, but, like, the path of, like, okay, Brock's gone. This is the path, right? Are you ready to embrace that role? Because that's what we're hoping for him. Yeah, I mean, going to ring, you know, and keep in mind, all these guys are going to have opportunities to not come back in the sense of going into the portal, and we're never going to win the money game and things like that. I mean, we've been very clear about that on air, off air with our players, but it's more so about development. Can we lead you to the real promised land of the professional world? Things like that. But Ring is so super talented, and obviously was a huge piece of what we did this year, and to the point where he was playing, I don't know, I haven't looked at the stats recently, 32 to 35 minutes a game. A true sophomore, his only second year college basketball. So such an exciting guy. And yeah, with his measurables and all that, that stuff's great, but it's his heart and his motor that he plays so hard. And so he's a guy that, yeah, if we can hold on to him, I mean, he would be just a massive piece of what we're trying to build around for next year. And you can move around different positions. Obviously, the fact that we were able to play him a lot more at the wing with Ibu playing the four and ring, like that makes him different too. So I thought we hit all that right. And then with Arik, Arik's minutes were very sporadic. Like I told him when he messed it, look, here's the deal, Arik. You want to play more. You're clearly, you know, capable of playing more. But at the same point in time, if you sit back and you say, okay, look, as a freshman, he was a freshman. As a freshman, I cracked the lineup, the top. We don't play 12 guys. We play 8 this year. I cracked the lineup of a team that finished top 150 in the country that was also had guys like Quinzak and Brock. So those guys are going to play as much as we can. And I was the guy that cracked the line because there was a lot of guys we had that didn't get that opportunity or redshirt. They're good players. We have a lot of good players that are sitting out this year. You got to walk away with that and say, I'm really proud of that. Like I was able to play a 10-minute per game role. And obviously you want more. Everyone wants more. And with a bunch of these guys graduating, moving on to the professional ranks, like you, that is the vision and goal. But you should walk away and say, man, I actually did something really good. So yeah, it starts with those four guys. But then it's got to move on to everyone else too. Everyone wants to have the meeting and say, okay, where do you see me? We just want to have the best information to give them and see where their heads are at too. And see what the plan is, because it's got to start with can you hold on to half your roster, and then plug in the right guys through the two high school guys coming in and then the portal and all that different stuff. That's what's happening for every program in the country right now.
Yeah, it's amazing chaos to me that as soon as you lose, like it's you get a grieve for a second, and then the next day get right back.
And
at
least the NCAA creating this Division I portal after the Final Four, love it. Even though I'm sure there's a lot of stuff going on ahead of time with agents and stuff like that, but still love it. It does push things back. The goofiness is the D2 portal is alive and popping, and those guys are in the portal, and so it's like, it makes it really hard because it's like, do you attack a couple of these guys, which we are, or do you wait for the Division I guys? And two, it's just like trying to sort out, like, what is the market financially for everyone thought, okay, well, it's gonna push back this year because there was the one time before the rev sharing and opting where everyone could just blow all this money, get rid of it, and then it's going to push the other way. It's not pushing the other way. It's just getting more. The cost of doing business is going up and up and up, and so it's getting extremely hard.
Well, Coach,
just say that.
I know in the next couple of weeks we can maybe get more of a clear picture on what this roster looks like, and we can kind of dive into that too. But man, what a season!
Yeah,
it was so
great,
entertaining,
man.
And as a fan again. It was an awesome year. There was ups and downs, as we said, but very entertaining.
But it's, like the winning this and that, but then too, like the academic side of it, the side of growth, we averaged over 1,500 fans a game, which is the most since well before pre-COVID. Like people are coming out, they're showing up, they're showing love. The fundraising, we're breaking fundraising every single year, and we have to keep doing it. Again, the cost of doing business, and I'm not even talking about like NIL stuff or FSR. I'm talking about just like being able to operate this at a real Division I level. It's getting more and more expensive, so we're trying to find ways that we can help that out. So the fundraising, the attendance, the academics, Kitzman sent some stats on the social media growth, like it exploded. So
doing a phenomenal job there.
Yeah, it's like everything is growing, and that's like, okay, you want to step back and evaluate how healthy are we? And we have challenges, but like, man, the excitement level is as healthy as it's ever been.
Yeah.
And I just go to what I worry about is we've won 64 games in the last 3 years. That's a lot of wins.
That's a lot of, yeah, a lot of
and,
dubs.
And you worry that people take it for granted. Not out of, they just, I mean, yeah, show up and win 20 games. That's not, one team did it this year.
Yeah.
Us. And it's so hard to do based off of how you got to build your non-con, and our league's getting better, better, better. So I sit back and take a tremendous amount of pride in that. But two, you just, you know, hey, for us to continue to keep this thing going, we got to keep building, man. We got to keep building. We got to keep growing. We got to keep finding ways to build a great roster and things like that. And it's just, it's hard, but, I'm really excited. I'm really excited what we're doing. And it's a weird, you know, week where our guys aren't around, but it's also good. It's good for them to get home, and it's good for us to, like, I got a tree in my backyard that blew over during those windstorms. And,
oh my gosh, yeah.
I have like a portable electric chainsaw.
Nice.
It's very dangerous, but you know, getting some of those branches trimmed off, and I got a neighbor who's going to come over with the real chainsaw and, you know, trim that thing up, but just being able to try to just get back to some equilibrium with life, because it's an eight-month sprint ever since June 1st.
It's hard to plug back in to that side of it, I imagine.
Trying to, you know, be present, you know, and build with my family, and, you know, obviously getting a chance with my daughter last week, and my son's going to play in this thing called the show next, you know, this Sunday down in Denver, top whatever, 20 players in the state, and so get a chance to see him run around, and it's just a goofball all-star game, but it's fun just to see him run around probably one more time before he goes off to college himself. But, yeah, just trying to be all the roles, man, dad, husband, you know, the whole thing, you know, and just
and building. Podcaster too.
Oh yeah,
I mean, podcaster.
It's all
this
part
is,
of it, man.
This has been great.
That's right. So
on the Madden stuff, certainly with both of your kids too. Rooting for both of them locally, but it's gonna be. I'm gonna be really interested to see how things work with Sundance. One
you
of
never
your
know.
Your guy, man, your boy, and then your son.
Yeah.
That is. This is why I love covering Northern Colorado stuff, and I like bleed into the Wyoming side.
Oh, they're an hour away right there.
It's,
so
it's so much fun to see those connections.
Yeah, it
and
is.
This is one of those big ones that I'm really excited to see.
No, he's excited. I mean, they got beat in the Final Four, which was really, let's be honest, the state championship. When they and Lutheran both got to, it's like, hey, whoever wins this thing. You know, Silver Creek, you know, Coach Penny did a great job. But, I mean, those two teams, they had the two real live D1 guys, and Speckman, the guy that he's going to Indiana State, and he's 6'10", and he had 31, Madden had 32. It was a pretty dang good game. It was
some
a slow start for the Czars,
basketball.
But Lutheran just had a little bit more in the tank, man. Just like the Grizz had a little bit more in the tank than the Bears, but what a great journey for the Wizards, and four times in the state Final Four in 4 years as a team, like Coach Racken, what a great job they did.
Yeah,
and I'm really grateful that he got one. The state championship, because I was watching the next night. We were sitting there. The wife and daughter are already in Vegas, so we're sitting there on the NFHS log and sitting at the house watching the 6A Final Four and some great teams and some great players. And so watching those guys, and the 1 and 2 seed both got knocked. And I just like, man, like just to win one of those things is so hard to do, because there's a bunch of good teams. Like even if you're good, you're one of several good teams.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him, like – to be able to get one of those done and have a banner, and, you know, it's pretty cool.
It's awesome, man.
Yeah.
You know, I've got the preps basketball world and volleyball world will be sad to see those kids go, but I know the NCAA is pumped to have them.
Young Avery, we're telling her the progression, get to the Coliseum.
Yeah.
Then they lost in the state championship last year, right? And now they got one more run, and they got a good team coming back with the Czars, and so in the volleyball world, they're going to have a chance. It's just, it's fun to watch in the club world. That thing is, I mean, her team is awesome. They already have like 5 D1 commits, and then they have two young ladies that are a year younger that are like high major Division I players that are just and they're like a top 20 team in the country. But there's like when you watch them play, every team they play against, it's like every team, it's 6D1 versus
elite,
it's just
volleyball.
It's nonsense how talented it is. It's like, what is going on?
Yeah.
But I love it. I love that she loves it and she's competing and having a good time.
Well, I know you have a blast going to watch these.
Oh, yeah.
I always love your posts, because whichever kid you post, you always say my favorite player.
Yeah.
So in my mind, I'm like,
volleyball
which one's your favorite player overall?
Different sports, and that's a blessing. So, yep.
Coach, always appreciate it, man. And we'll look forward to catching up with you next week. And
we'll keep it rolling.
Off-season podcast is always fun, too, because we get into a lot of the interesting topics surrounding the NCAA.
So much going on. So, absolutely. Okay,
all right, my friend.
Sounds good, Brady.
We'll talk
to you
soon.
Yeah.
The Two-Man Game podcast is brought to you by Renaissance Insurance, Ryan Hicks.
What's up, guys? It's head coach of the Bears, Steve Smiley, and I'm honored to tell KFKA listeners all about my guy Ryan Hicks and Renaissance Insurance. Like basketball, there's plenty of players in the insurance game, so how do you choose the best one for you? For me, I look for character, passion, dedication, and like a star hooper, talent. Renaissance Insurance checks all the boxes and draws up the winning play every time. Let them find the perfect game plan for you. Call Ryan at 970-674-8825 or go to team-rig.com. Go Bears!